Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Okay, when you look at Miriam Shore's IMDb page, you see that her career is the perfect example of a versatile working actress. She's been on stage in Lynn Nottage's Pulitzer Prize-winning drama Sweat. She's been in the film adaptation of Hedwig and the Angry Inch. She's had role in prestige TV dramas like The West Wing, The Good Wife, and The Americans. Most recently, she's been making us laugh out loud as the sharply dressed publishing diva, who loves a statement necklace, Diana Trout, on the TV Land comedy Younger.
Don't you ever book drop like that again.
I was only trying to help.
You were insinuating that I am bad at my job. I will have you know that I am the hardest worker here. When these lightweights go on vacation, I work. While you were Instagramming your way through India, I was working. And before that, when you were vaporizing on the quad at Dartmouth, developing your fondness for African literature, do you know where I was?
I'm going to say at work,
and don't you forget it.
That is also the show.
She's so sweet. Such a kind soul.
I like Diana
Trout. I know, I like it. I like her too. I'm so not like her. I'm so schlumpy and apologetic. It's really nice to get to inhabit a person who's not like that for a while.
That's Miriam Shore. I'm going to talk about you a little bit more, okay? That's also the show where she cut her teeth as a director. While Younger is returning for its seventh season later this year, it's looking like a busy 2020 for Miriam, starting with her latest role in the film Lost Girls, premiering this Friday. Directed by Liz Garbus, the film follows the true story of the investigation into the disappearances of young women on Long Island believed to be the victims of a serial killer. Shore plays the mother of one of the missing girls, Lorraine.
My daughter had three cell phones. She was working on the Craigslist.
Yes, so did Maureen.
So did Melissa.
Yeah, they all did. That's why they're all so the same. Because online, you can practically go shopping.
Sooner or later, they're going to get this guy. There's got to be some computer trace they can do.
Miriam Shore, so nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too.
Wow, that register. For your voice,
That's Lorraine is a real person, and she's from Maine, and you know, I sort of did my best at sort of getting a similar accent to hers, and I kept looking to the director to tell me to pull it back or take it further. I have good friends and family from Maine, so of course I'm just expecting any moment that their ridicule will be. Fervent. I got to meet some of the women who unfortunately have lost some loved ones to this terrible tragedy, and they were like, no, you got Lorraine, and I'm glad I could, you know, bring her to life so that her voice could be heard, you know. It is interesting when you you try to play different people and figure out where their voices are and try to get it right.
So Lost Girls, as we said, people in this area will remember, this was a real story. How did you end up with this project?
I auditioned. I saw the script, and I saw that Liz Garbus was directing it, who I've always loved, and her film, What Happened, Miss Simone, about Nina Simone, is one of my all-time favorite movies of all time. twice, I'll say it twice. So I was a bit of a weird fangirl, which I didn't let on at first, so she wouldn't be creeped out. And Amy Ryan is a very good friend of mine. Who is also, I just think, one of our best actresses. And to be honest, after I read the script, I was furious. And I just wanted to shout. And I thought, well, one way to shout is to get to play one of these women and give her a voice. But I auditioned, just like an actor does, you know. Mm-hmm. And I got cast. Luckily, I got to be a part of it, and hopefully we're making some noise.
Yeah, part of the story of this is the idea of imperfect victims, mm-hmm. and how police department and law enforcement behave, mm-hmm. when the victim doesn't kind of fall out of a textbook of a blonde goddess cheerleader from a upper middle class family.
Right. Yeah, no, definitely being female and from a socioeconomic class that is usually shoved to the side when we take things into account of what we want to do and look at in society. These women were treated horribly, and their concern for their loved ones and daughters was a non-concern for the people whose job it is to look for them. And they were basically shut up. They were silenced. But the good news is that they wouldn't be. You know, Mary Gilbert, who Amy Ryan plays, would not stop. And these women as a group continually added their voices until they just couldn't be ignored because they were too loud. And as a loud woman, I appreciated that.
You mentioned Liz Garbus. I mean, people know her work as a documentarian. And you've worked with so many different directors over the course of your career. What was her direction like? And could you tell she came from documentaries?
Well, that's interesting. So I've been directing myself, yeah. And I was really excited to get to watch her work and to see how she sort of worked her way through that. I mean, she knows how to make a narrative film, but this was just the first one that she had, the narrative full-length feature that mm-hmm. she had. And so getting to see how she did that, the ease, the grace, the sort of trust that she had in her own ability. I'm always sort of amazed by people who can trust their own abilities. And that was great to see. But also as a documentarian, she is used to examining truth, examining realness. And so that feels comfortable for her. That's a language she speaks. And so that's what she put in her film. And this, what better story to have the truth come across than this one?
You mentioned Amy Ryan in this film. It's Lola Kirk's in this film.
Yeah, amazing, amazing women.
What do you like about working in an ensemble? Because Younger is an ensemble, too. Mm-hmm. Very obviously different tone, but an ensemble of great actors nonetheless.
Yeah, I mean, an ensemble is great because it's never all your fault. So there's that. That's A number one. But an ensemble is great because there's great power in it. You know, I mean, you bring what you can bring to the table, and I think a community is always stronger, mm-hmm. you know, and that's true in art. That's just true of so many things. And certainly a community of women is a powerful thing. These women whose sisters and daughters had been found murdered, when they came together as a group, there was a great deal of power. And through us, we sort of felt that power just sitting in those rooms playing those women. And there was a moment when I was in this room with all these amazing female actors and female director and producer, and I thought, oh, I get why they're scared of us. Just a moment, just a little voice that was like, yeah, this is powerful. There's power in it.
When you think about art being able to make change, because when this film was announced, the day the film's release date was set, I don't know if you know this yep. or not, but the Suffolk County Police yep. held a press conference saying, oh, we have new evidence in
10
this
years.
Case.
It's been 10 years. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, when you think about doing work, do you think about the impact it can make?
Well, look,
culture.
I play pretend for a living, and it's valuable. I have kids, and I watch what it can do for them to understand the world by playing pretend. But I know that mostly it's entertainment, and entertainment mm-hmm. has its value. But in the rare opportunity that you get to add your voice to something that you truly believe in, or that you see an injustice, and you can at least say something about that, it's a gift that you get to do that through your art, you know. And I mean, I actually also believe that art does many things for our society, you know, even when it isn't about a true story. But in this case, it was really powerful to me to be a part of that.
The name of the film is Lost Girls, and it drops on Netflix on Friday. My guest is Miriam Shore. So what's the deciding factor for you about a role at this point in your career? You've done so many different things. You also have your life as a
yeah.
mom. You have your life as you.
I like that you put mom first, because that's how, yeah. No, you do. You have your life, and you have to sort of see where it fits in with that. But, you know, it's a living. You have to make a living. So you see what sacrifice is worth what, you know? And is this going to keep me away from my family? And will that be worth it? And is this a role that I feel like I can bring anything to, mm-hmm. you know? Because sometimes I might be up for something or think about being up for something that I'm like, I'm not sure I'm the one, you know, I'm not sure it doesn't really speak to me. And so I don't know that I can speak to it. And then there's, you know, other times where you'll fight like hell for a role. But
what's an example of each of those? One that you saw that maybe we know and you thought, you know, maybe not for me.
Okay. It's a funny example, actually. A long time ago, there was a musical that was going to be done that was a delightful musical, but I just, where I was in the world and in my life, and it wasn't feeling right to me, and it was called Thoroughly Modern Millie. And I remember thinking, I did audition for a workshop of it, but I remember thinking when the show came around, I was like, no, I think that's not for me. I feel like there's some, I literally said to myself, I feel like there's someone out there that this is for them. And, it ended up being a nobody that no one's ever heard of. So it didn't really work out. No, it ended up being Sutton Foster. And when I saw her in it, I was like, yeah, Eureka. That's exactly right.
Does she know that story?
Yeah.
Have you shared that with her?
Yeah, I
did
share with her. We've known each other for a while, for a long time. So, that was one of those moments where you witnessed exactly the right person in exactly the right role. And it created this spark that everybody could feel. It was very electric.
A role you knew just, you're like, this is my role. I know this.
Well, it's funny because I remember the first audition my agents ever sent me on was for a workshop of Hedwig and the Angry Inch. And I they were like, it's Hedwig and the Angry Itch. And you're playing Yitzhak, and a former drag queen from Eastern Bloc. And I was like, I don't know. But I got my Fonzie for President t-shirt on and my big combat boots and a... And I went over there and they're like, you know, you're playing a man. I was like, oh, no, I get it. And I picked a song. They were like, just pick any song from the 70s. And I picked You Light Up My Life. I don't know. I just had the sheet music. That happened to be in the workshop at the end of the show before Midnight Radio was written for the end of Hedwig. Stephen, we didn't have a song there. The song they chose was You Light Up My Life in German. It just happened to be the song that I chose and brought to it. And I thought... And I saw other people there kind of practicing, doing their musical theater thing, wearing skirts. And I was like, I don't think they get this. I don't even know what this is, but I weirdly think I get it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I need to get this. And it was not a thing. At that point, it was a workshop for like $100 a week, you know. But I don't know. It felt there was some weird kismet moment there that I felt like this needs to happen.
My guest is Miriam Shore. Can we talk about Younger a little bit?
Yes, we can.
I'm obsessed with Younger.
I'm so happy to hear
I've
that.
I've been obsessed with Younger for a long. I have friends who... Who found me t-shirts at Goodwill.
Really?
From like young, with ones that I probably can't wear in public. There's a particular one.
Oh, yeah.
You know the one.
I do. I have it. And my kids are like, Mommy, what does that say? I'm like, not what? I don't know.
Don't need to know.
Look at that shiny thing.
Don't need to know. So Diana Trout is just one of these great characters. What have you learned playing her throughout the season? She's, for people who don't watch the show, you should. It's really, I think it's pretty bingeable.
It's super fun.
Yeah.
It's a delight.
And she is this woman who runs a publishing house and is, you know, kind of got a lot of sexual energy to her as well. And
the thing about her is she's unapologetic.
Yeah.
And I'm someone who, I walk through the world I apologizing for pretty much anything that's not even my fault. And I get angry at myself for doing that, and then I apologize. But it's to put on the mantle of someone who is unapologetic for a bit and feels righteous about her own ability. I've said it before, when I see someone who understands their own ability and values it, I don't know why that comes as a shocker to me, you know, especially when it's a woman. And it's when you just pretend and walk through the world that way for a bit, it empowers you. And I've, you know, it also is something I think being a boss gave me some of the confidence to ask to direct, to ask if, you know, if I might try this out, and was told, well, sure, go for it.
That's interesting. You just had the conversation with Darren Star.
Yeah. Weirdly, I just thought, well, I'd been thinking about it and asking many of my director friends and just sort of questioning and talking about what we need and talking to other female directors who had gotten in the business as actresses. And I just had a conversation with Darren at the end of season four. I was like, how would you feel about me directing an episode? You know, and he was like, well, let me just ask you why. And I was like, because I always believed in telling stories, and I feel like being a director, you control the story the most. And I'm fascinated by it and want to do it. And he was like, yeah, sure. It was a little easier than I thought it would be. And then I was like, oh, okay, so now I have to do it. And it was awesome.
What part of your being an actor helped you be a good director?
When I asked the 50,000 people who are directors what the most difficult, most challenging part was, a lot of them said, just make sure that you creatively understand how to talk to actors. And I was like, I've been told to shut up on enough sets talking to actors. I know how to talk to actors. I was like, oh, well, that is something I really can bring. I understand what it's like to be standing there and to try and figure out the puzzle of being an actor in that situation. So I think I can convey that to them. It's the sort of more technical pieces that I was most worried about. But, you know, there's a lot of people on a set who are really good at their jobs. And if you don't know something and you ask them to help you with them, they will. So delegating is an important skill.
There's this trailer that TV Land put together of you behind the scenes, you doing your things. And, you know, usually these things are kind of really smoochy. And this one is smoochy, but I actually believe everybody in it. I want to play a little piece of it.
Oh, boy. Okay.
It's very sweet. This is your fellow actors talking about you, Miriam Shore, as a director.
She was brilliant. She was quick. She got to the point. She found the little moments.
I had no idea it would be that special. It's my favorite episode I've ever shot.
To have one of our own on the other side of the camera was honestly the best director experience that I've had maybe ever in my career.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Miriam Shore's first take as a director.
What did it feel like, that first take?
It's funny because I forgot to say cut. And my friend who's an AD who's going to get a chance to direct herself was like, yeah, I've witnessed a lot of first-time directors, and they always forget to say cut. That first time.
Because you're so in the moment.
You're just so in the moment, and you're also waiting for the person who says cut. So that was fun. Fun, embarrassing, fun moment. But yeah, no, it was, I felt proud. I was like, you know, this is... a challenging thing. I'm not going to be the best director. That's the hard part, is to remind yourself that, like, okay, you're not going to be the best. You're going to be the best at it that you can be right now.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to get better, and you're going to learn, and you're going to be there to learn. And you do have skills that are going to be valuable, though. So, you know, find those.
What was the skill that you had to learn? The thing that did not come naturally?
That's a really good question. So many. Mm-hmm. Being able to delegate, being able mm-hmm. to say, there are so many departments here, I have to let go. I also have a little trouble making choices in my real life. So if you're like, where should we go to lunch? Well, that's me for 3 hours trying to figure that out. Or like, you know, which shirt? I don't know. I'll agonize. I'll make the wrong choice. And you have to be decisive in that moment, because you have to move on. You don't have time, especially in television directing. You got to mm-hmm. go. So... the thing that was hardest, and that I feel like I had the greatest learning curve on, by the end of it, I felt like, oh, I got this. I can make the decisive choice right then. I have to, and I can let it go and not double back and be like, was it the right choice? Because I've moved on. And that was a really valuable lesson just in life.
And for people who don't know the premise of Younger, it's about a woman who's played by Sutton Foster, who stays home with her children, tries to get back in the job market in her 40s, can't. So she's... reinvents herself as a 20-something and pretends to be this 20-something so she can join a publishing house and get into the publishing industry. So it's really, the clothes are great and the sets are great.
Well, it's Darren Star.
Yeah,
he
the
has people a certain are, aesthetic, and he loves New York.
Yeah, the people are good looking and everything. But I think there's, I feel like it's a really feminist show.
I like to say it's a delightful confection that is actually about something. You know, it's optimistic, and so it feels good to watch, right? Because there's a lot that is not very optimistic right now, or is very cynical right now. But it's not stupid, and it doesn't talk down to you. And it talks about books. I don't know. For me, as someone who just loves books, to be able to like to talk about them and have them a part of your daily conversation in a fun show that you also are just having a great time watching. I don't know. That felt like a revelation to me. Because I love stories. I love my stories.
And I think it's also really makes important points about ageism.
Well, ageism and sexism, and also, you know, how the world decides who gets the microphone, or who gets, or what perspective we're going to look at things from, you know, and who we value. Like, why we're so youth obsessed, and why is that? I mean, why don't we value experience? You know, and my character certainly asks that question every 15 minutes as someone who worked very hard in a slightly different environment for women, where, you know, wasn't just expected that you would succeed as a woman. She's sort of a little flummoxed by sometimes she sees people not appreciating, you know, the hard work that she does, or people not indulging in that hard work themselves, you know.
And there's also been this interesting storyline where she is dating... gets married to a plumber.
Yeah.
And well, there was an interesting sort of class conversation going on during the show.
Yeah, she had to come face to face with her own prejudices, her own bigotry about how she sees herself. You know, did she think she was better than someone just because he was a blue collar worker? And she had to actually examine that, which, you know, and of course, within the confines of a light comedy, but at the same time, it's a real conversation. And you know, what do you value? Do you just value the idea that you're with someone who is a certain kind of guy, or do you actually value the person you're with, you know, and everything that they are? So that was great. That was a great journey to go on, you know. Also because Chris Tardio, who plays her husband, is a delight of a human being as well, you know, really just a kind talented person. So that shines through. The fun that we have on set, I think, really shines through in the show, which is why I think it's enjoyable, too. You can tell when people are having fun.
My guest is Miriam Shore. Let me ask you, you've got so many different projects. Magic Hour, Mrs. America.
Oh, Mrs. America. That's Mrs. America. I mean, well, okay. It's about the attempted passage of the ERA, and Cate Blanchett plays Phyllis Schlafly, and Tracy Ullman plays Betty Friedan. I play her best friend. And Rose Byrne plays Gloria Steinem. I mean, it's about, I just yeah. couldn't, I can't even, I was so enthralled, just so excited to be a part of it. And then just to get to play, pretend to be Tracy Ullman's best friend. So I was like, oh, you mean what I used to pretend when I watched her on television that she was my best friend? Now we actually get to do it in person. Fantastic. So, and you should know that she's an incredible human too, in person. So that's always nice to learn.
So what else is coming out? I mean, there's a stack of things.
Well, you know, I mean,
that you're excited about. There's something that you're really excited about, that Mrs. America, and then sort of the next thing that you think is project you have, which you're going to get to stretch.
Well, I'm trying to create my own projects. I'm trying to create a project about the punk rock movement of the 1990s, told from a feminist point of view, which I think is an interesting thing. So I'm trying to do that. I'm trying to create it. And you know, there's a lot of power when you learn that you can be in charge, i.e. be a director, and it sort of opens doors for yourself about how you look at yourself, which I think everybody should do. I think everybody should mm-hmm. do something that's terrifying. I think society would like to tell you you're done making those discoveries at a certain point, certainly if you're a woman, definitely if you're a mother, that you're like, okay, well, you're done doing that, so now what you're doing is just focusing on these people and the development of your self is over. Mm-hmm. You're like, okay, but I'm actually going to be alive, hopefully, for a little bit more. So maybe I could continue to develop. And that's been a great discovery. So I'm looking at directing more and creating my own projects. But I love collaborating, as we talked about before, too. So what's exciting to me, I mean, I never know what's around the corner. That's one of the greatest things about getting to be a creative person mm-hmm. and getting to move from project to project. And of course, I miss doing the theater. So that's also something that will always be a part of my life on some level.
Yes, I am sweating Broadway.
Oh, my God.
You were public, I mean.
Yeah, getting to work with Lynn Nottage. I just, you know, with the two Pulitzers. You know, you need the pair. I feel like once you get one, you're like, well, this feels, I just balance-wise,
she's got
I need
two. Kids.
Two.
Each one of them gets right, to play with
right,
one, you
right.
know.
And to be a part of that play during the 2016 election was, I think, a way that I didn't absolutely lose my mind was to be having that conversation with people, which is what you have when you're in a play. It's what you have in any art, is a conversation with whoever's viewing, with the artist and the viewer. But in a play, you're with each other physically. And so, you know, you could feel the change from the audience mm-hmm. from day to day. But I'll tell you, the day before and the day after the election doing that play was monumentally different.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was really interesting. It was New York audiences are very sophisticated. They know a lot about a lot of things. They pay attention to a lot of things. But sometimes I think we know more than we know. Well, that's true about human beings. And to be reminded that, no, this is actually something you need to be paying attention to. What's going on in this country was, they came so raw and open after the election, just sort of like, we need to learn a little bit more about what's going on in our mm-hmm. own country. So it was a really amazing experience.
Lost Girls drops on Netflix this Friday. Younger season 7 coming up. And TBD, punk rock chicks from the 90s. Miriam Shore, it was a pleasure having you here.
It was a pleasure being here. I'm a fan, so there you go.
Back at you. This is all of it.